Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Author Marion Keyes, good morning.
Good morning, Brendan.
Now, Marion, I'll just warn you that if people are thinking I'm being a bit overfamiliar with you, it's because I've been in this kind of weird, I suppose you'd call it a parasocial relationship with you for the last week or two, because I listened to your latest book, My Favourite Mistakes. But you read the audiobook yourself.
I do.
And you give good value as well. It's 15 hours, right?
Yes.
So you've been in my head for 15 hours. We've been out walking together. We've been on runs together.
Stop.
You've even put me to sleep some nights.
Yeah.
Like at times it has felt clandestine. I'd say I'm just going out for a walk with Marion Keyes. So I did speed you up slightly towards the end. Do you enjoy reading the books for audio?
I do. I've only done three. I've done the last three. About 1,000 years ago, I read a non-fiction book for audio. And this is back before digital. And it was like anytime your stomach rumbled, like you lost a morning's work, you know, or like if you turned over a page and it rustled,
yeah,
you know, you'd have to go back and start again. And I was, after that, I said I didn't want to do any audiobooks. But in the last, I suppose, 6 years or so, audio has become a way that people really experience books. And it was suggested quite, how would you call it, persuasively, that I would be reading my books for audio from now on. And I really didn't want to do it. And then it turned out I tried it and I loved it. Like, because it feels very intimate. It feels like it's just me and whoever is listening to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I did one, and then I was on for it, and I'd actually like to go back and do some of the other ones.
Like Taylor's versions. Go back.
And, exactly.
Versions.
Yes. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, because it is actually very intimate when it's you reading it as against some kind of, you know, AI sounding kind of voice and everything. Very intimate as well when you're reading the racier bits.
Stop it. Stop. It's just, when I'm writing it, it's bad enough.
Yeah.
But then on the mornings when I knew that I was going in to actually voice them, I can't tell you, Brendan. Right, because when you record a book, it's very, very small. Like, it was just me and a male producer, and we were in this very small, dark, soundproofed space. And I made myself promise myself that, like, I'm never going to write these sort of things again. But he made it really, we had a laugh, you know. I mean, the only thing you can do is laugh, or else you die from the mortification and just from dehydration, from all the sweat you lose from the embarrassment. No, the racier bits were hard going. They really were.
So the thing is, it's interesting. I'm wondering, is there a movement here? Because I was talking about this with Curtis Sittenfeld last week. So this book features like middle-aged desire and sex, right? And I know teenagers listening now are making puking motions at home, like, and they think they invented it, like we thought we invented it, and our parents' generation never did it. Is it still kind of a love that dare not speak its name, the whole middle-aged sex scene?
I think it's got an awful lot better, like, for lots of reasons. Like, a lot of things have changed recently in that, like, you can now say the word menopause in public without having to, like, throw holy water over yourself, mm-hmm, and, you know, and do an exorcism on the room. I just think maybe middle-aged women have become more confident. And other things, like the fact that we're living so much longer and that we're healthier longer. And, like, you know, obviously, women are not a homogenous group. Middle-aged women are not, you know, and there are plenty who are like, this is grand. You know, I shut up shop at the age of whatever, and that's fine. I'm perfectly happy never opening the shop again.
Right.
But there are others who don't feel like that. And I've always felt like, you know, there's this kind of mythology around women and sex, and that women don't actually enjoy sex at all, and that they only do it in order to get their grass cut or something like that, that it's some side, you know, sort of transactional exchange.
That men demand sex.
That's it. Yeah. That men are gagging for it the whole time and women are absolutely dreading it. And, like, every relationship is different. But also, people change throughout their lives. And it isn't something that kind of ebbs in a steady line. Sex desire, you know, or sex drive, you know, until it, like, lands at nothingness. It comes and goes, you know, according to your circumstances.
And the amount of time and space
that's
you have
it, on, yeah,
on
and
hands.
What's going on in your body.
Yeah.
So I wanted to write a love story about people, two people who had sort of been in love with each other for over 20 years, but kind of never really at the same time. And they both married other people and neither of them are married now and they've met again. And so obviously sexual desire had to be part of it, as did other things like all of us in mid-age kind of look back at our lives, or I can only speak for myself, and think there are many things I did when I was younger and more clueless that I wish I had handled better or wish I hadn't done at all. And that, like, my greatest gift, if I could have a time machine to just go back and do things better, I would. But that's just never going to happen. So how...
I kind of felt, is there an aspect in it of we get to the age that we're at now, where you suddenly have history. And you just have to learn to kind of live with it and forgive it yourself and everybody else.
Yeah, because it's impossible, really, to go back and change what I have done. I'll speak for myself. It's impossible. And like, even when there are times when I can apologise and I can try and explain how it was for me at the time or try and fix anything that's fixable, there's an awful lot that isn't fixable. So I have to forgive myself for the clueless person I was then. And just kind of say to myself, well, I know better now, so I'm going to do better. But there's a lot of acceptance that I've had to do in middle age. I mean, I'm not even middle aged anymore. I'm further than that. But the only person really who can do it for you is yourself.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned the menopause, and Anna, the main character, is coming into the menopause. And it's kind of a big theme across the book, but you do issues so well. There's no lectures, lightly done. Kind of normalised, like.
Yeah, but it is normal. I mean, it happens to 50% of the population and it has happened for millennia. And it's, the thing is, it was always something that was made fun of. Like, women going through the menopause were always laughed at for, like, breaking plates and not, like, keeping their beards tidy. But it's like, going through the menopause is like going through adolescence in reverse. Like, it's very frightening. Like, all these hormones that were like part of you for like, you know, 3 decades have suddenly gone out like the tide. And you know,
was it hard for you?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like, it wasn't just even the bodily stuff, like the heat, you know, but it was the emotions, like huge anxiety. And that's because simply, you know, the calming estrogen, I think it is, the calming hormone, that's gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's left. And, you know, there's nothing to keep me calm any longer. And the worry, then things like forgetting everything, you know, like forgetting people's names, you know, or forgetting things I've agreed to, or forgetting words. Like, you know, I mean, I knew I was probably too young for Alzheimer's, but like it wasn't a happy experience. And then
I presume you've had your issues with depression down the years. Like, is that kind of largely under control as you get older? No, I don't know what.
I mean, I feel fine now. Like, I feel like I wake up in the morning and I think, oh, thanks be to God, I feel normal today. You know, whatever normal is.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, I'm never, you know, there's always something going on for every human being, but I don't feel the way I felt then. And I haven't for a long time. And part of that is because I mind myself. You know, I there are a lot of things I can't do anymore or won't do because it's just not worth the price that I'll pay afterwards.
Yeah.
And, you know, an awful lot of it is to do with adrenaline and overuse of it. Like, if I do something where, you know, it involves a lot of kind of, you know, summoning adrenaline from over summoning, you know, too much adrenaline, then there's going to be a deficit and I'm going to feel bad. So I just can't do that to myself anymore. And it's funny because, you know, the way, like, we're very, very good now at saying, oh yeah, you have to be kind to yourself and you have to take care of yourself. And like, people say that in the abstract. But if you say to somebody, look, I don't think I can go to your party because I don't really feel able for it. People are not generally, it's interesting. People are like, yeah, well, I'm grand for you being kind to yourself and taking care of yourself in other situations. But when it impacts me, I don't like it. And I'm like that as well. So I think we have to learn to move from talking the talk to walking the talk around other people's mental health.
Yeah, Yeah. I think it's kind of unfair that some people are able to just breeze along. And look at you now. I bet you have a million things in a matrix of kind of things you have to do. And a lot of us have various matrices of things we can do and can't do that we know won't be good for us and all that. And it's hard work, like, compared to when some people just seem to kind
I know. Some people are blessed. Yeah, I mean, but there are lots of ways to be a human being, is how I look at it. And there are some people who are phenomenally, like, they go from social event to social event. A lot of these people tend to be ambassadors, I think, or, you know, they're very kind of high up, they're high functioning. And then there are other people like me who find I can do it and I'll enjoy it, but that's kind of it for the month, do you know?
Yeah.
But I can do other things.
Is this hard, this kind of thing?
It's all right because I know you. No, but beforehand, before, no, like, yeah, mean to know, whatever. But I woke up anxious and that's okay. Like, I mean, a certain amount of anxiety is necessary to do anything where you need to think fast, I think. The adrenaline is a great help. Like, it's there for a reason. So it's harder than staying at home and doing a Sudoku, put it that way.
Gotcha.
But there are a lot of things that would be far worse. Doing a keynote speech, I would never do that. You know, put a gun to my head and I still wouldn't do it. It's not my thing. Where there's other people, I've seen them. You know, they have three lines written on a, you know, the back of an envelope, and up they hop and they do like a half hour of rousing, moving stuff.
Yeah, ignorant courage.
What's that?
Ignorant courage would be my mother's phrase for that.
Tell us.
Ignorant courage. Some people just are full of ignorant courage, like, and then the likes of you would think too much about things.
Yeah.
I noticed an interesting thing you wrote recently. You think you have ADHD, do you?
God, I don't know if I do. Well, OK, I do an awful lot of quizzes online. I will do anything to procrastinate. I will do anything. You know, I do, like, you know, things on BuzzFeed, like, you know, what dessert are you, you know, like anything at all that I don't actually have to sit down and write. But, you know, and like then I watched, what was that thing with Andrew Scott in? Ridley, was it?
Yeah.
So then I was doing loads of Am I a Psychopath quiz, you know, because I do. But yeah, the ADHD thing. So I was doing quiz. A couple of people had said it to me. And so then I did a good few quizzes and they were all saying, but you know when you're doing quizzes and you want the answer to be a certain way? Mm. So I was certainly going, like, strongly agree for all the things, like, you know, for, like, I forget my own name, I forget where I live, you know, I have never remembered the blah, blah, blah. But so I talked to my GP about it and she was very encouraging. She said, I mean, this is encouraging because I would like to have a label for my fizzy head.
Yeah.
And she said, yeah, that, like, she wouldn't be surprised if I did. So I have found somebody who had said that she'll do, it's really, really hard to get an assessment. So I found somebody who said she'd do an assessment. But because I, inverted commas, have ADHD, I have been so overwhelmed with my messy life and fizzy head that I haven't been able to actually fix a time to go for my assessment. Which, I mean, I think, you know, surely that is proof in itself.
Exactly. You should get a pass on
I
that
I should.
Exam.
I don't even need the assessment.
Yeah. And come here, so you'd like to get it. Do you feel it would explain a lot of things?
I do. I really, really, really do. Yeah, like, I forget. And I think, I know that I think differently to other people. Like, and I know that, like, my head is kind of, most of the time, I've got about 40 things. Like, all the lights on my motherboard are lit up. Do you know, like, all those tabs are open an awful lot of the time. And I'm really, really bad on detail. Like, I'm always writing down dates wrong or, you know, putting things in my diary for the wrong month or the wrong Saturday or the wrong one. You know, I put in 1 a.m. instead of 1 p.m., that sort of thing.
Do you think as well, you hear of a lot of people now who they get a diagnosis and they realise that was connected to my depression, that was connected to my drinking. Do you think it might have been?
Well, I mean, I'm really not an expert, although I feel like I am from all the Googling I've done. But Dr. Google says that there is a link between ADHD and addiction. And it's something to do with low dopamine in the brain. But please, anyone who's listening, do not listen to me. I am not an expert. And Dr.
This is
Google,
like, Reddit here.
Yeah, exactly. It's you know, it's irresponsible
but no,
of me
I
to
do
say this.
I do think that there is
you see, and that would
now.
I would like that. You know, I would like some sort of catch-all diagnosis that would say, you're a weirdo, but you're not to blame.
Yeah.
I'd love that.
Yeah. I remember a thing you said years ago somewhere. Maybe you said it a lot of the time, that you were born without the rule book.
Yeah.
And it really struck me at the time. I think a lot of us feel we kind of
Do you feel like that?
I definitely am.
Yeah.
Don't understand things the easy way other people do.
No, like, and other people just get it.
I'm baffled by a lot of things.
Like, yeah, and other people just know the right thing to say in a tricky situation, you know? Or I will just say the wrong thing, thinking I've said the right thing. And I don't know what I've done wrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
No rule books for us.
I believe that you, some of the things you put in place now to mind yourself, you don't follow the news anymore, no?
I don't at all. Like, even when you were saying things there at the start of the show, I was like, go on, this is news to me. I mean, obviously, it's impossible. It's like, you know, it's contagious, bad news. It's really, even though I try very hard not to read or see or listen to anything, I still have a vague idea that every day brings some more. I don't even know the word. It sounds like misinformation, you know, to wreck our heads from over there.
Yeah.
And I mean, I wonder at this stage if it's tactical. But no, I don't. I try to do the Sudoku every morning. And to get to the Sudoku online, I have to run the gauntlet of the front page of, and I'm trying so hard, like, don't look for his name, don't look for his name. But it always jumps out some other mad thing he's done. But I don't, because I don't see the point in making my life more fearful than it already is.
Yeah. And I know, it's okay if you don't follow it.
It's
okay?
Fine. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, there was a time, a lot of people think if I stop, you know, you can't. Okay.
No, but like, so much has happened that I don't know about. And if I had known about it, I would have worried myself sick at the time. And now, you know, things are happening today and they're awful as well.
Yeah.
But I spared myself all those other days where I was able to get on with and do nice things.
You also did an interior design course.
I did. Yeah. I mean, it was something I'd always wanted to do, because like a long, long time ago, you know, I put two mismatched cushions on a couch and they worked, do you know? And like,
you have an eye.
That's what they said, Brendan. That's what they said. And I thought, I have an eye. And I thought, I'm going to do a course. And I thought I'm going to be brilliant at it. And then somebody will give me a job doing like fabulous bedrooms in a fabulous hotel. And it was always my kind of, I'll do that now when work calms down and when the time is right. And the time was never right.
Yeah.
There was always something to do. There was always, like, you know, work to do. And then I turned 60 and I thought, oh my God, you know what? I think I'm going to die one day, because I never believed it till that point. And thought, well, if I want to do this course, am I going to wait till I'm 72, you know, or 81? I thought, no, I'll do it now. So I did a course, and I'm so, like, I didn't learn what I wanted to learn. I thought it would be about the cushions and matching them and matching mismatched things and learning about fabrics and colours and beautiful things. And instead I learned how to do floor plans and how to, you know, where to put the light plugs, the light switches on a wall, and where to put the electric plugs. That was what...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't sign up for that.
No,
nevertheless,
no.
It was still good to do it. It was still like this gift to myself. Like, I took nearly a year off work, which felt very scary. But also I thought, look at one day, and this sounds very morbid, I think it's lovely, one day we'll all be dead and none of this will matter. So I might as well do my interiors design course. So I've stopped it now because I've started, you know, playing around with writing a book again. And I can't do two creative things at once.
Yeah, you'd need your full focus for floor plans.
Oh, really would. I got this fabulous, fabulous measuring tape. One of those yellow ones, you know, those kind of metal ones. And if you flick it, like my one is 8 metres long.
Yeah.
And I was, oh God, I was having such a great time. I was going around the house measuring everything, measuring my husband, you know, just because I could, you know. It was just...
You need to have it hanging on a belt off.
I would love it. I really, really would. And then I got a laser one, but the laser one doesn't give you the same kind of... that kind of thrill of the noise of the metal tape flying out across the room. It's
very,
it's beautiful. It really is. Yeah.
Speaking of your other half, I see he's now Tony himself. You call him himself. He's Tony himself on Instagram now, and he's posting all these gorgeous nature photos and stuff. He's one of these people who likes
Yeah, he climbs. Mountains and that he climbs kind of serious mountains.
Do you
like,
go with him?
I don't go on the really hard ones. Like, he was climbing volcanoes in Ecuador in November. And I thought, listen, I'm grand. You work away. But I have done things like we climbed via Ferratas in Arizona and in Germany. So I will climb if I'm attached by something to with a rope to yokes.
Hang on. You're climbing up, like, actually climbing attached onto things?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking hill walking. Like,
I know. I do that too. Right. I do that
too. But you're going up.
Yeah, like, and down, I'll tell you, vertical. Down is harder. Down is much harder. Well, obviously, I suppose. No, maybe not. I found the down much harder. Like, I was hanging on a thing and I was holding on to a thing, kind of a ledge with one hand. And I was trying to find a ledge with my feet and I couldn't. And it's just I see. I'm going to spend the rest of my life here hanging in this space. And it's interesting, I suppose, what your body can do when you're scared, you know.
Yeah.
You see, that's healthy adrenaline, I suppose.
Okay, yeah. I'm amazed you do that, yeah. You moved house as well?
We did a year ago. Yeah, it doesn't feel that long ago, but we did. We moved from Dunleary to Ballantyre. We thought we were moving to Rathfarnham. And so we were moved in and we were like going to the shops and stuff, and we found that, the Tesco up in Ballantyre was actually nearer than the one in Rathfarnham. And then I found that the chemist in Ballantyre was, funnily enough, miles closer than the one in Rathfarnham. We thought, have we actually moved to Ballantyre?
So, and that's okay, I'm sure,
no, it's great. It's great. It's great. It's just funny, it's lovely. No, it's lovely. It's like it was, we'd been 27 years in the other place and it was just time. Again, like age, people were saying to us, the age you are, like if you want to move, you'd want to be doing it now.
Are you in a bungalow now? Is there no stairs?
No, it's funny. We aren't in a bungalow, but I have had moments going down the stairs when I think, this was a mistake. We should have gone for the flat.
Listen, the chairlifts are amazing.
It's so, I believe. Yes, my mother has a lovely one.
Around corners and all kinds of things, yeah. I read that you left a furnished child's bedroom in the old house, I suppose, furnished for a child you thought you might have someday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, the house we bought it about 28 years ago, and this is back in the day when we were hoping to have the nippers. And yeah, so one of the bedrooms we did was this beautiful, it was like a princess's room.
Yeah.
And the princess never showed up, but we're fine now, we're grand. And I mean, everybody goes through their own journey. And I don't want to be kind of given, I mean, I'll say how it was for me.
Yeah.
Like
okay.
it took,
if you want.
Yeah. Like it took a long time. But I also felt like by then, like I'd been given so much by the universe. Like I'd been given the ability to stop drinking alcoholically, and then I met this lovely man who was really, really nice to me, and then I got a job doing something that I was able to do and people were willing to kind of pay me for it. And I just think, I thought, like, nobody gets everything, and it's like I didn't want to tempt fate by asking for more than I was, I don't know, entitled to. And that's just me. Like, I mean, for anyone else who's on that journey, like, you do what you need to do because everybody works through it differently. But I feel like some kind of grace was afforded to me and my husband, and we were just able to go, okay, let's focus on what we have rather than what we haven't. But that was just me. And anybody else, do go to whatever point you feel you need to before you make peace with it, is all I can say. It's very painful. It's really surprising when it happens. I think for most people, you just don't think it's going to be part of your story. And like, we're surrounded by nieces and nephews, we see them a lot. And like, we take, sometimes we talk about and say, like, what a laugh it would have been. And maybe it wouldn't have been. Who knows? Who knows? But you get what you get. And this is what I've got. And I'm absolutely grateful for my life.
Yeah. Okay. And you do, in my favourite mistake, you do write beautifully about children and the relationships people have with their kids with other people's kids and everything.
I mean,
there's a
lovely
tenderness in it. I could almost feel a kind of a slight
Brendan, I do. I love them. Like, I love watching my nieces and nephews grow up and change. And, like, I'm very, very close to them. And I'm lucky. Yeah, no, I do. And I love the child-parent relationship. I really, really do. And I love writing about it. I write about it a lot, and I think it must give me, it must give me, I don't know, comfort or joy. It definitely gives me joy. That's a fact.
Yeah, yeah. And the book is out, I should say, in paperback, and I think it's a huge bestseller already. And it is full of heart and all that, but it's very funny as well.
Thank you.
You know what the other thing I love about you as well is that, and I suppose this goes back to the interior designer in you, the books are full of stuff as well, the stuff that's in life, nice things, even down to fillers, Botox, boleros, gorgeous fashion, you describe it. And I think there can be a tendency to think these things are unserious things, but fripperies, but they're not. They're important, aren't they?
Well, I try to write about contemporary people in the contemporary world, and I try to write about what's important to us. And I want to create characters who are recognisable and believable, you know, and to write about, you know, Claire's the eldest sister, to write about her like she's 60, you know, of course, I mean, she was always into clothes and fashion. Of course, she's going to be having Botox and fillers and being quite open about it because that's the way she is. And I do think, you know, shopping and retail therapy is very much one of the ways we soothe ourselves. It's a big part of life. Maybe it's a bad thing, but I'm not judging, and it seems to me absolutely appropriate to include those things as well as people's emotional realities.
Yeah, yeah, because their emotional realities can be bound up in
very much so. Everything is enmeshed. Yeah.
So this is the seventh Walsh family novel, and so there's a few TV things going on. RTE BBC currently making a TV show called The Walsh Sisters.
Yes.
Is that exciting?
Brendan, I cannot tell you. I am out of my mind with delight about it. Yeah. So they started filming about a month ago, and it's a 6-part series. There and 6-hour long episodes. I was down on set last week, and they were. These are books that I've written, for people who don't know. I've written about 5 sisters over the past 30 years almost. And so this is the first TV series, and all the sisters are in the series. And Stephanie Preisner, who many of you will know, adapted the books to amazing scripts. It's all set in the present. So I was down watching them filming, and it was just so phenomenal. 3 of the sisters are visiting another sister, Rachel, who's in rehab for drug addiction. And to see these people who had been in my head actually walking around wearing clothes and saying words.
Oh, you have to say it's unsettling, is it?
No, it wasn't unsettling. It was lovely. It was lovely, lovely, lovely. It was just so exciting. I felt so lucky. And they all looked great. And the whole thing felt very, the atmosphere was so upbeat and lovely on set, and the people, the actors are amazing, the director's amazing, like everybody who's involved in it.
And are you interfering?
I'm not at all. No, I don't feel like that. I feel like they're really good at what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, and I trust them all. Like, I really trust Stephanie, and I've met the main actors. I trust them.
You had them all around to the house?
I did.
Pizza and coleslaw, was it?
Pizza, coleslaw, and if they wanted drink, everything was on the counter. I'm a really bad host. I can't. You know, some people are great at it. You know, they make people talk to each other, and they're going around with Prosecco and everything. I can't. I'm like, just, if you want something to eat, if you want something to drink, it's over there, you know. And because, I blame my ADHD.
You have a tablescape, no?
I did not have a tablescape. I didn't even have enough chairs for people. But yeah, it was lovely to meet them just before they started filming. I just feel really lucky to be part. I'm not really part of it. Sometimes they'll say, what kind of wedding ring would so-and-so wear? Or would they call the mother ma'am or mum? You know, these small things.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, it is. It's lovely to feel
that,
yes.
To get the texture and the detail is important, isn't it? And then Netflix have adapted your book, Grown Ups.
Yeah.
No, so you're an executive producer on that one.
I am.
So you'd have a chair with your name in it, I presume, will you?
Well, I hope so.
Be yeah, in well, glasses.
I think and a loudhailer. Did you say a loudhailer? Yes, yes,
no,
definitely.
But, yeah,
and a chair with my name on the back. Yeah. They're starting filming in July, and that is the production company that made Slow Horses. And actually, the same producer who made Apple Cider Vinegar is producing Grown Ups. I know.
Right.
So that's going to be filmed in Ireland as well.
Amazing. Fantastic. There's, look, lots of texts of people just saying how fantastic they think you are.
And oh, God, thank you.
Open you are about real life. I could listen to her all day. Delightfully insightful.
Thank you.
And laughing and crying simultaneously. National treasure, obviously.
I know.
Yeah. The thing is, though, the book is really, and like people there, I think, feel that connection with you. The book is kind of ultimately about people connecting as well, isn't it?
Completely. Yeah. I mean, Anna was living this fabulous life in New York, except it was really, really stressful. And she moves to a town in the west of Ireland and she's alone when she arrives. And it's about community.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what I wanted to, because I find the world so scary. I wanted to kind of bring it in small and say, you know, we can live really fulfilling lives with the people close to us. You know, I feel so powerless about the world, but I'm not powerless to affect and connect with the people that I cross paths with every day. I kind of wrote it as a comfort for myself to know that, to tell myself, like, there are ways to be happy even when the world feels like it's, you know, the ground is moving beneath my feet.
Yeah. Are you still shy? Or do people grow out of it?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think I'm shy anymore. What I am is introverted in that, like, I can chat away, but then I need time to recover.
Yeah.
You know, some people get their energy from being out and about and moving through the rooms and laughing and, you know, clinking glasses and ha ha ha. Like, I love a bit of a chat, but then I need recovery.
Yeah.
I need peace.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm shy.
Yeah,
I don't think,
I think
I'm
a lot
shy.
Of people who were maybe were told they were shy.
Shy, I just introverted.
It's just introverted.
Yeah,
we understand that now.
Or self-conscious, maybe, which is a different thing.
Yes, yes. So My Favourite Mistake is out now in paperback. It's published by Penguin Books. Marion, you'll be in conversation with Joseph O'Connor at Limerick Writing Festival on April 10th. And people can see UCH.ie for that, for tickets. And you'll be talking with Tara Flynn at the Pavilion Theatre. That's on June 18th. And people can see Pavilion.ie for that. I'm sitting in the car. One more text. Supposed to be in the supermarket, but I had to stay listening. I'm 34 years sober. I think I have ADHD. Oh, and a mother of teenagers. About 30 computer tabs open in my brain at once. Think I'll go for a nap now and sort my whole life out when I get up. At least I know it's not just me. Has a fizzy head. Thanks, Marion. So there, look.
Thank you, person in your car. Thank you.
Okay, My Favourite Mistake, out now, and it's terrific. And Marion Keyes, it was lovely to talk to you again.
Lovely talking to you, Brendan. Thank you.